Hey, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. He's Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we will also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, this week is massive, so it needed to be brought to you by Emily, presented by Bleecker Street. A daring, richly imagined portrait of the brilliant mind behind the novel Wuthering Heights. Frances O'Connor's directorial debut stars Emma Mackey from Sex Education as Emily Bronte, the reclusive daughter of a clergyman with a tempestuous, rebellious nature and a passion for storytelling.
Set against the rugged, ever-changing beauty of the Yorkshire moors and with an immersive, darkly evocative score, the film uses the few known facts about Emily to craft a passionately told fable about the complex and iconoclastic writer. Emily opens in New York and Los Angeles theaters February 17th and nationwide February 24th. So as you make plans to see it, here are some Letterboxd reviews about the movie. Francis Meh writes, "The drinking, smoking, opium-eating clergy Emily Bronte we deserve."
Serena writes, "If you have the chance to catch this on the big screen, don't think twice."
Volcanic Danvers writes, "This does things to me. I love cinema."
So that's New York and LA this weekend, nationwide next week. So this week we'll be getting into Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Return to Seoul, and Of an Age. From there, we'll dig into community reviews, tagged weekend watch list, how last week's movies are doing, our own watch list, and final name TBD, the Letterboxd Hot 100 returns to the show.
But first, ants. I'm trying to knee slap, but you can't really, it's hard to record. So imagine that that's what I'm doing. I'm slapping my knees and saying ants, okay? Are you imagining it? Okay, we go. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, directed by Peyton Reed. This is on 59,000 watch lists, and it's opening wide, of course, this weekend. Superhero duo Scott Lang and Hope Van Dyne, together with Hope's parents, Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, find themselves exploring the quantum realm, interacting with strange new creatures, and embarking on an adventure that will push them beyond the limits of what they thought was possible.
This is a big release. We had talked about this movie in our giant size, like, year-end preview, because Ant-Man and the Wasp, the third movie in the series, was really high up on our watch lists data. Like, it was watch listed so highly on the list, and we were curious if maybe there was some, like, Marvel fatigue happening, and especially how we felt about the movie itself, but how you felt about this franchise. So you saw this. How has anything changed since we met last time on the show?
Yes, everything has changed because I watched all three Ant-Men over the span of two Ant days.
So you marathon these movies and you've seen the new one already.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And I do have to say, in that episode that you just brought up, I was kind of clowning on the name Dr. Hank Pym, acting like, oh, we don't know who Dr. Hank Pym is. Shut up. But you know what, Slim? Dr. Hank Pym is my favorite Marvel character. I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious. He's the one played by Michael Douglas. I think he's so funny. He's obsessed with ants. He's an ant scientist. And I really, really have to atone because I was watching this one and I kept wishing, I was like, where's Dr. Hank Pym? But they give him some jokes in this, which is nice because he's like kind of the straight man, you know, to Paul Rudd's Scott Lang, who's kind of goofy, but Hank Pym has the jokes.
You talked with Michael Douglas. This is not, you know, you're making waves in the red carpet scene, the interview scene. You're in there. You're asking the question. So the journalistic integrity right now of this show is off the charts. And you asked Michael Douglas about the famous ad that he had done with Scott Lang that you referenced, or Scott Lang, that you referenced earlier, which is just Paul and he saying ants slapping their knees. Is that not the greatest ad in the history of Marvel, in your opinion?
It is the greatest ad in the history of Marvel. It's the greatest moment overall in the history of Marvel. And I said this to his face.
Paul brings out the best in you.
Okay.
Just remember. You know, we just, there was no rhyme or reason. It was just one of those goofy things, probably at the end of a 14-hour day. We just playing around, having a good time, and so happy that you like your co-star, getting along really well, and it's a nice group, and there's a lot more difficult things going on in the world than what was going on right then. Ants.
That was the most starstruck I've ever been, was when Michael Douglas did the Ant-Man knee slap for me. Wow.
I love it. So this series is leading into like the next phase of Marvel movies. So Kang is the main villain, played by Jonathan Majors. How was Majors in this?
He's the absolute standout, I will say. Like the movie exists basically to set up Marvel's Phase 5 and Kang's villain era. And well, yes, it does do that.
True.
But Jonathan Majors is so incredible. He has such stage presence and charisma, and he's going to be in Creed 3. Like he's really blowing up. So yeah. He's definitely my second favorite part about the movie, right behind Dr. Hank Pym.
Camden left a review on Letterboxd. Jonathan Majors, undisputed MVP by a mile. So I saw like some stuff online about how the Rotten Tomatoes, I'm saying Rotten Tomatoes on Letterboxd podcast. Look out, everybody. Oh. The Rotten Tomatoes score is kind of low. But we'll see next week how things shake out. You know, people love Jonathan Majors.
Exactly. That is the one thing that everybody can agree on. It is our uniting force. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Next on our list, on 32,000 watch list, directed by Davey Chow, Return to Seoul in theaters. On an impulse to reconnect with her origins, Freddie, 25, returns to South Korea for the first time where she was born, before being adopted and raised in France. The headstrong young woman starts looking for her biological parents in a country she knows so little about, taking her life in new and unexpected directions. So I was, when we're putting this list together, we're tracking watch list data, and this was on a ton of watch lists. So I think this is like a long anticipated US release for this movie. And I watched a trailer for the first time, and I really want to see this. What do you think about, what's the vibes with this movie?
Oh man, I want to see this so badly. I have heard exclusively great things. It showed up on many of my mutuals' best of the year lists. So I am so stoked to see that it is finally being released in the US. It seems right up my alley, and I think it will harm me emotionally in a very good way, of course.
KYK left a review. Seoul set, French dialogue, goth clubbing, sad girl. I was always set up to love this. Blown away by Park Ji-min's performance and the way she internalizes her pain and then leaves behind a trail of chaos. There's one throwaway line side plot that is maybe played for comedy that I thought was random and left a bad taste, and I wish it wasn't included. But for the rest of the film, it's so beautiful and powerful. Gutted. So very positive reviews coming in for this movie.
God, you guys are really selling me.
We need to see it.
Let us return to Seoul. Our next film is Of an Age, directed by Goran Stolevsky. It is on 5,000 watch lists, and it's coming out in theaters this weekend. A Serbian ballroom dancer experiences an unexpected and intense 24-hour romance with a friend's older brother. Ooh, steamy, spicy. I can't wait to see this one either. Slim, what about you?
Yeah, I'd first heard about this when we did a previous episode that was so huge. We needed the help of Focus Features to bring that episode out. And we talked about Of an Age. And I think you had mentioned that this is the same director as the horror film You Won't Be Alone, which I did like. And I had no idea. I mean, talk about genre changes between the two films.
What was that one about? Can you remind me real quick?
That was about a witch that was like shape-shifting through different areas of the land and going through different families. Very strange, very slow moving, but I did enjoy that. So now to see that there's like a totally different vibe shift in this film, I'm even more interested to see it. And the reviews coming in about Of an Age have been off the charts. This comes from Glenn Charlie Dunks. Goran poaches liberally, predominantly Moonlight, and Then We Danced head on with Of an Age, but nevertheless creates something of such aching authenticity. I suspect many queer people who grew up in suburbia will feel familiar with the feelings it conjures and the situations and the small details it finds funny and sexy and moving.
Dan P. writes, "There's a revelation we experience as young queer people, a realization that life will go differently for us than almost everyone we've ever met. It's personal and profound and terrifying. It anchors us to that period of our lives and it echoes forward in time. The world contracts and expands and suddenly a decade later, we're dancing at someone's wedding from an old life and we come face to face with our younger selves, caught in that moment of revelation. My sincerest hope for you is that it's a moment of joy." wow, there's been some incredible writing these days. Everything that we're reading, I'm like...
Meanwhile, I'm writing reviews for horror movies talking about how I'm cleaning out my air fryer, missing the finale of a movie. And you have Glenn and Dan writing these like brilliant thesis type reviews. That's why I'm here. I'm trying to balance things out, you know?
Yeah, that's good. We have to have balance in the universe.
We have to have balance. So VOD call-outs this week. We've been trying to kind of see what movies have been coming out on VOD on demand to just give tips for people. We also mentioned that Pro and Patreon members, if you have these movies in your watch list, you do get notified about which favorite streaming services they do get onto. But Infinity Pool is already available for purchase digitally. Came out like 3 weeks ago.
But will it be the NC-17 cut? Hashtag release the hog cut.
Okay, so let's look back at the previous week. Maybe the hog cut will be out, who knows? But let's see how movies are doing that were released last week and maybe some things that we watched. So what do you want to highlight from the previous week, Mia?
Oh, well, I just saw the lovely film Blue Jean, and I just want to start putting that on everyone's radar. It is a very affecting and effective drama about a gym teacher who has my haircut but blonde, but more importantly, she is a lesbian struggling to both conceal and accept and come to terms with her identity in highly conservative Thatcher-era England. And it is out in UK cinemas now with a to-be-announced American release date.
Ooh.
I really loved this. It won a bunch of acting awards at the British Independent Film Awards, which is what put it on my radar, and now I am passing it along to you all. Also, I saw a double feature of The Wedding Singer and Music and Lyrics on 35mm, and it was the best night of my life. Thank you.
Wow. I love The Wedding Singer. The movie changed my life when that came out.
It did. Oh, my God. The songs, I'm going to freak out on the pod. We have to change the subject or I'm going to lose it. So
what if we start a Letterboxd podcast where we just watch The Wedding Singer every week and it's just our reactions to watching it every week?
Oh, that could be good. That could be that. Ooh, that's going to make a lot of money. I think that this is what's going to.
Bleecker Street, are you listening? Do you want to help sponsor that show too? Yeah. Just real quick, we're doing Kill Bill on the other podcast that I do, 70mm. So I had to try to track down Kill. Yes, guitar stringing, you name it. But I just want to call out that it's still very hard to track down right now unless you own the Blu-ray. It's not streaming. It's not for even rental digitally.
What? Wait,
Yeah, it's totally off of everything. You have to get the Blu-ray. So support local, your library if you can, or buy a Blu-ray from eBay like I did and hope it just arrives in time.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, of course, I already have a Blu-ray of it, but I remember the good old days when it would just be on Netflix or HBO Max. It was like a staple.
His theater is... in your state, right? Quentin's Theater, the New
true.
Beverly. Have you ever seen The Whole Bloody Affair, the combined cut that has never been released?
No, I've been waiting for it. Once he plays it, like he's played, you know, like Kill Bill Volume 1 and Kill Bill Volume 2 and everything, but never The Whole Bloody Affair. So that is what I am waiting for. And also that's the theater I saw Wedding Singer and Music and Lyrics at,
oh,
by the way.
Oh my God. Just my God. All right, real quick, last week's releases, Sharper, sitting at a 3.2 average. Baby Ruby going down a decimal, 2.8. I don't agree with that rating whatsoever, but I'll just call it out. Magic Mike's Last Dance, 2.9 average right now on Letterboxd. A lot of buzz on Twitter about the reactions to that movie. Why don't we go to the Letterboxd members? Let's see what some Letterboxd members have to say.
Spacey Girl says, me, I'm giving it 4.5 stars. Friend. So you thought there was good character development? The plot was good? Me. No, but that's not what I'm looking for.
Very honest. Very honest in that review.
Yes.
Thomas left a review. Does Channing Tatum have the strongest core on planet Earth? There's no way to tell, but evidence points to yes. The opening and closing dance sequences are sublime filmmaking. So some very positive reviews coming in, despite the 2.9 average for Magic Mike's Last Dance.
I've been seeing it waffle between 2.9 and 3.0. I have been keeping tabs on the score, and it goes back and forth. So
it's a battle.
Make your voice heard.
It's a battle right now.
Yes, it's a battle.
So normally we check in on the Letterboxd top 50 of 2023, but Jack puts that list together, thinks it might not be ready until April-ish. He did want to call out some new additions to the highest rated movies of the year so far. Willak Pirka, The Cinema of My Village, a Peruvian film about the magic of movies, which made the top 10. He also notes the mumblecore comedy The Civil Dead made the list for the first time, which I loved. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't seen it, but I've, again, that's one that I've heard exclusively great things. I love Whitmer Thomas. Mm-hmm. And they did an interview that's exclusively posted on Letterboxd, I believe. If you go to the Ways, yes, the Ways and Means HQ page.
It's
hard-hitting journalism. Notes. Look at us go.
If you had to guess, we're going to talk about the Letterboxd Hot 100 again right now. If you had to guess what the number one most watch listed movie last week was, what do you think it is?
The number one last
previous
week.
Previous weeks, it was Infinity Pool and it was Babylon.
Okay. Oh, Slim. Oh, Slimbo. What trailers came out? Oh, let's say John Wick 4. I don't know.
John Wick 4. Okay. Not even in the top 10.
Humiliating.
It's funny because, like, this is still brand new. We've only done this for like 3 weeks. We're trying to like see what happens to make a movie become the most watchlisted movie of the week. And I guess it isn't really trailers as of yet, because Knock at the Cabin is number one.
What?
For the most watchlisted movie of the week.
Huh.
Babylon, what? Number two. Yeah. And the, believe it or not, The Whale has jumped to number three. So still more research needed to see what the heck causes a movie to jump up the charts like that.
This doesn't make sense, Slim.
It's the Hot 100. It's the Hot 100. It's
it doesn't
irrefutable.
Have to make sense. You're right.
It's irrefutable.
You're right. Yeah, can't argue about that. Instead, let's get to the most popular section of the show, where we shuffle our own watch lists and start to make some headway on our backlog of movies. So we'll head to our watch list, filter by stream only, and then sort by shuffle. And the first movie that appears is the one we'll watch before our next episode. But first, before we assign our homework, first we're going to talk about what we watched last week. Slim, what did you watch?
I watched two movies. So when Mitchell and I did the show, we shuffled, but then we also were supposed to watch the oldest movie, the movie that has been sitting on our watch list the longest. And for me, that was Mean Streets. But this is mea culpa time. I forgot to sort by stream only. So Mean Streets is not streaming. So in reality, Sleepers by Barry Levinson was the movie that's been sitting on my watch list the longest. So I was like excited because I thought this was like an Ocean's 11 type romp. I was thinking of Sneakers with Robert Redford.
No. So,
this is not that. This is actually the opposite. It's about a group of kids who pull a prank gone wrong. They get sent to juvie and experience pretty much every nightmare you can imagine. So as I'm watching this, I was like, oh my God, why did I watch this?
Is Brad Pitt in this? Or
Brad
am I crazy?
Pitt, yeah. He plays one of the kids as they grow up. He plays a lawyer. Jason Patrick is in it.
I don't believe that. Sorry, I'll say that right now.
He does not feel like a lawyer in this.
Nope.
Jason Patrick is in this. He wears penny loafers and high white socks. I couldn't get over that. Robert De Niro plays a priest. Dustin Hoffman also plays a lawyer. So not a great movie. I think it was probably a better book, in my opinion. It is based on a book. But I also shuffled and I watched Popcorn, which was a lot more fun. It's about a film class that puts on a horror movie marathon, which is just an amazing idea. But a killer from the past starts to take them out one by one while they're doing the marathon. Not bad. A lot of fun. It has an amazing poster. So I liked it.
Ooh.
What about you?
Nice. What did I freaking watch? I watched Miss 45.
Holy cow.
I know. So this was my very first Abel Ferrara. Very exciting. Big milestone for me. And it's only about 80 minutes. So that's awesome because they do not make them like that anymore.
Isn't the pitch for this just like a nun with a gun on the cover pretty much?
Yes. Yeah. Which really sold me. So I had been kind of putting it off because the log line's a little heavy. It's about a mute woman who is assaulted twice in one day and then goes on a revenge spree. But Ferrara shoots it with discretion. Like it's a fun movie once you get past the yuckiness. And it's so satisfying to watch her kill all those men.
Yeah.
I'll say it. And oh my God, the fashion in the movie as well. Like she's always dressed in red and black. She has these amazing black leather pants. Like, and I am somebody who exclusively wears red and black. So that I have a lot of new potential outfits coming up. But yeah, anyway, she did nothing wrong, and that's that.
Miss 45. Yeah.
She did nothing wrong. She's
innocent. This is like one of those cult classics, Miss 45, mm-hmm. that Abel Ferrara, if I remember correctly, I think Abel Ferrara even like gets murdered. But is that a spoiler? That's not a spoiler, is it?
No. He's the very first person.
Yeah.
He's the first rapist, which is crazy. Puts himself to cast out yourself there. In that role.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. Yes.
Well, Tarantino does that too. It's a popular thing to do for some reason. But yeah, it's a fun film despite that heavy log line.
So before we shuffle again, maybe we'll spotlight some community reviews from folks that are tagging their reviews, weekend watch list. You can do the same. Maybe we'll spotlight your review if we have a second. Brian Lai watched The Outwaters, which is getting some like buzz on Letterboxd a la Skinamarink, in my opinion.
Ooh.
Brian writes, a fairly experimental take that's a reminder that the found footage genre can still be scary in 2023. Set in a desolate desert that shows just how frightening and isolating it can be in one of nature's cruelest environments that has been softened by the bohemian chic of Coachellacore. Never said that phrase out loud in my life.
Coachellacore?
Yeah, I remember that.
Wow.
I did watch that. The first half is very like found footage. You're following these corny people that I kind of wouldn't mind them getting murdered in the movie. And then the second half gets nuts. Like cosmic horror is tossed around a lot in reviews for this, and it goes wild.
Ooh.
So if you're into that, check it out.
Matthew wrote a review of All That Jazz. Are there more dancer, choreographer, film directors out there as opposed to the more common writer-directors? There should be. Fosse's direction and editing move with an innate sense of rhythm and dynamics that keep the film incredibly engaging, even as he employs bizarro, over-the-top, on-the-nose theatricality. Mm. Yes, I love this film. I just rewatched it even. And yep, it's... Oh.
Is it 5 stars from you? Is it 5?
I think I was waffling. I was like 4.5, 5, I don't know. And then I think I decided on 5 stars ultimately.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, fuck it, 5 stars. Or I was like, F it, 5 stars.
That's a great shirt idea, I think.
Yes.
Slap a Letterboxd logo on that. We could be cooking with gas.
Yeah.
Titanic, we mentioned last week, is back in theaters with a high frame rate. I think it's also 3D. So there's a few reviews tagged this week. Amanda Wheeler tagged one. I could write thousands of words on my love for this movie. Today, I was struck by the way I will go through life hitting milestones at nearly the same rate as this movie. The movie is celebrating 25 years, and later this year, I will be doing the same. I love that this film is such a big part of my growing up, and we will get to grow old together. Grow old with Titanic.
Oh, I'm seeing it tonight, Slim.
Really? In 3D?
Yes. In 3D, high frame rate, I'm going to weep under those glasses.
I don't even know what would be 3D in that movie besides like various people dying.
The propeller. The guy propeller falling off the propeller. That's all I've been thinking about.
I love the idea of people like not putting the glasses on until that scene and then like they only keep it on for 30 seconds. And everyone takes them off simultaneously.
Shall we shuffle our own watch lists perhaps?
We should shuffle.
Okay, let's do it. Let's get to it. Okay.
So let's head door. If you want to join us, please do so. We're going to go back to our watch lists. We're going to shuffle. We're going to sort by stream only. Well, I am just because I prefer that. And then filter by stream only because I prefer that. And then sort by shuffle. And the first movie is what we have to watch before the next episode.
I'm nervous. What did you get?
Colin Farrell, The Lobster.
No, Slim, yes. Shut up.
I got it. I finally got it. Oh my God. Did I just win the lotto? It's on HBO Max and Canopy right now.
Damn right it is.
A dystopian near future, single people, according to the laws of the city, are taken to the hotel where they are obliged to find a romantic partner in 45 days or are transformed into beasts and sent off into the woods.
Oh, wow. I wonder how you're going to feel about this one. It's very polarizing. I mean, I love it, obviously. But I liked the killing of a sacred deer.
I like that. That's the other movie that I've seen of his.
Okay, then we'll be fine. We'll be fine. You'll enjoy The Lobster. I'm going to bet on it. Well, I don't know if I'll bet money on it, but.
What about you? What are you going to shuffle and get?
Click. Ooh. What is. Okay. I got a film called Angela, 1995. It is directed by Rebecca Miller, who is famously married to Daniel Day-Lewis. Whoa. Not that that should be the only thing we define her by. She is also a brilliant filmmaker, but it is noteworthy. So Angela seems to be about a 10-year-old girl who is leading her 6-year-old sister through various regimens of purification in an attempt to rid themselves of their evil, which she believes to be the cause of their mother's mental illness.
Whoa.
Wow.
This is heavy.
Oh, man. It also says some stuff about visions of Lucifer, a circle of dolls and toys, and this seems creepy. I'm in. You know what? I'm in, Slim. Only 1,000 people have logged it.
Oh my God, a very exclusive club. There's 10 fans. Yeah. 10 people have it in their 4 faves. It's on HBO Woo-hoo! Max and Criterion right now. Rebecca Miller. Okay. All right. Now, don't forget, though, because Mitchell and I did this last week, you also have to go back to your watch list. You have to sort by
when added
earliest first. So what's earliest like the first. Oldest movie? What's been sitting here waiting for you the longest? Finally, watch me on your watch list.
It is Let the Right One In, the original 2008. Can you believe I haven't seen it and I love vampires as much as I do?
Streaming on Hulu, Prime, Roku. Yeah. Oh my God, it's like everywhere.
All of them.
Holy smokes. It's a big moment. Huge. This is a big week for you. Wearing red and black.
Red and black, satanic week a little bit.
The amount of incense that will be wafting through your place right now as you watch these movies. Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow me at Mitchell Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you had the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps spread the word about the show.
Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.